Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to the latest edition of the In the Crease Podcast. I am your co-host, Dan Abram, joined today by...
In person today, my name is Kyle Devitt. I am the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse.
And we're in person today. We were in the Isle headquarters all weekend. And Kyle, the ceiling is the roof.
It is. And that roof is filled with scraps from Chipotle.
There was a lot of Chipotle had. We got double chicken, lots of guac. It's been a little testy in the air.
Yeah, it's been rough. We're in a very enclosed space right now. This is a tough ask. But we're going to get it done for you guys.
Oh, yeah. So the weekend started with a whimper. And it ended with a huge bang because the Dome Gods smiled upon us, Kyle. Take me through that final play, the game winner from Sergio Salcido.
You think the darkness is your ally, but you merely adopted the dark. I was born in it, molded by it. I didn't see the light until I was already a man, and by then it was nothing to me but blinding.
That was what was going through Sergio Salcido's head. Right before he stuck the game winner with 15 seconds left. Boom.
That was awesome. You know, I gotta say, I'm so happy this game played out the way it did because we really needed a redeemer on Sunday after a Saturday where Pace did not show up.
Nah, hashtag Pace is a lie.
Pace is a lie. It did not show up. There are no redeeming qualities for Maryland and Notre Dame. So we're not going to discuss
it. Unless you're like a huge fan of turnovers, which you could be.
Turnovers.
I guess if you like watching the ball fly out of bounds, it looked a lot like a D3 game.
Yes.
Or a high school game in many points. Not because of like the lack of athleticism, because everyone was playing hard. I don't want to be like the game was terrible, the players didn't care. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying both teams played very tight, and you could tell that. In the first quarter, I mean, you know, we had a little pre-show on Facebook Live, and, you know, I kind of predicted that it's going to be a very tight game. These teams, when they are pressed, when they are pushed against the wall, they'll go back to what they know. And what they know is control.
Absolutely.
And they both tried their best to control, and in doing so, got over... I'm going to say it. They got overcoached into this game.
They coached the heck out of the game.
Overcoached. You can overthink, overwork something. I feel like it was overdone for both teams.
Yes, and our Facebook Live pregame show, shout out to everybody who tuned in. That was awesome. I actually predicted kind of a high-scoring game because, you know, both teams graduate a lot of guys on the defensive end. They're scoring 16 goals per game. I underestimated both coaches' abilities to just suck the life out of a game. You were 100% correct in your forecast. So props to you.
I mean, sometimes it happens. Sometimes I'm wrong. I mean, you know, we both predicted Virginia winning, and we were right for most of the games of the last 15 seconds. So, you know, sometimes predictions go right. Sometimes they go wrong. I'm more interested in how the game plays out, if it's entertaining, if it's not. And we were definitely saw both sides of that spectrum this weekend on Saturday and Sunday.
Yes. So the main takeaway from Maryland and Notre Dame is that Maryland probably not going to be number one tomorrow. Notre Dame probably will be number one tomorrow. So... congrats to Notre Dame. Moving on to a real game, Syracuse 14, Virginia 13. We already talked about this a little bit, but let's go into the pace of the game, how it played out. Our overall impression is bow before the Dome Gods. They exist.
Yeah.
There's magic in the rafters.
Dome Gods are real, man. Dome Gods are real. And shout out to the Syracuse women who completed a similar comeback in their victory as well over Virginia.
Against Virginia as well, yes.
Yep.
But, you know, Syracuse was down by 5 in this game, and we saw this against Albany as well. They managed to find a way to come back, and Sergio Alcido, he can be quiet for, you know, 58 minutes. All that matters is that last play in the final 2 minutes.
He's, you know what he has in common? Like, I watch him, and his shot either is on 100% or it's 2 to 5 feet wide. You know, like there's no middle ground. Like, he might get saved, but, like, he's, like, getting saved by a goalie who's, like, lucky and covering a spot. You know what I mean? I feel like he has a lot in common with another guy we talked about previously, Mr. Perkovic. in that regard, just shooting wise, not style or, you know, type of player or anything like that. Just their shooting stroke seems to either be 100% on or off. And I think, you know, Saucedo, you leave him open and you let him go one-on-one at your peril. And that's what happened. I think, so for me, I really wanted to highlight this one thing that happened towards the end of the game.
Okay.
Syracuse is man up. Get a timeout. UVA comes out of the timeout, man down, and jumps the ball and locks off adjacents. And almost causes a turnover. Like, tips the ball and almost gets it. And then Syracuse gets it back. I felt like Syracuse getting that ball back. Not scoring on the man up, but Syracuse retaining that ball and not falling prey to the jump, to the defensive kind of, you know, gimmickry there. Which, you know, gimmickry is good. Sometimes it works.
Yeah.
It almost worked. It was, you know, it's ballsy. Like, as if you're watching that as, like, a coach or somebody that's, like, trying to learn about lacrosse and you're like, what are they doing? Oh, my God, yeah. They're locking on man down. Like, that's crazy.
High risk, high reward.
It is, and they almost got it. You know, I think this game was, you know, we talk about Notre Dame, Maryland being overcoached. I thought this was, like,
a
player's game. Yeah. This was a player's game, and it was fun to watch. I mean, you know, there are a lot of times where – we cover games, just give you guys a little insight. We cover games and we're like trying to do the score and we're trying to do updates and we're really preoccupied. And that kind of becomes the story for us as people that watch the game. But this game, then there are games like this where like you step outside of what you're doing and you just want to watch.
Yeah.
And that's what this game was. And I really loved watching it. I thought it was an amazing game. I thought it was like a game where like it's too bad that one team had to win. Like I feel like both squads made statements. I feel like they both played really well in different stages and different aspects. And I think it shows out that other teams should be concerned about both these teams.
Absolutely. I agree 100% almost with every point you just made. And talk about a player's game, but guys like Michael Krause, Dox Akin, Ryan Conrad for Virginia, they just seem to show up in every big game. It's like unreal how much Lars has them believing in themselves. Like, these guys are ballers, and they're, you know, freshmen and sophomores. It's crazy.
How many times have I told you this? What? Lars Tiffany, leader of men.
Leader of men. I agree.
100%. So, one of the other things, I think we were talking about this game, you know, it's a little early in the season, but it's time to start, like, identifying tendencies.
Yeah.
And one of those things that, you know, I was tweeting about during the game and talking about was UVA setting all their shots high. And trying to score on Malloy and having a lot of success with that. I think they kind of pegged him as a dropper. I don't know if he is 100% of the time, but he was for large stretches of this game. And I think that's how UVA got out to that big start. Like, if you're looking at the goals, they all went around his ear or, like, not even top corner, like, just away from him so that he had to make that extra step and he wasn't exploding onto the ball. On the other side of it, too, like, Will Raley came out of his cage a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know if you noticed that. That's, like, I haven't seen him do that this season. So I think that's more of a confidence builder. Obviously, losing the game is not a confidence builder. But the goal from Saucedo, I mean, that's, you know, Raley was clearly screened on that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can watch that. That ball kind of like skips past him and bounces right next to his leg and goes in. So that's a tough one for him to get. It was kind of like off stick. And I thought he was in the right position. He plays a high arc because he's a, you know, actually, Kip Turner plays kind of a low arc, but, you know, like, I think he's kind of adopted into that style that's going to work. So, you know, I was kind of going back and forth on these goalies before. You know, I haven't really said too many positive things about them. But I thought they both showed, like, stretches where they could be the guy. But this was an offensive game. This was a
House of Assassins game.
Yes, my guys. But who I should have predicted as the winners. Fine, come at me. It's fine. at me. It's fine. I deserve it.
The Dome Gods frowned upon us.
I did. I got frowned upon.
They smiled upon the team, but they frowned upon us.
That's all good.
I definitely agree. I feel like Will Raley had the more impressive performance because I felt like he gave his team a chance to win late in the game. He made a few saves, and he said, I want to win this game. And he really answered the bell because in their game against High Point and early in the week, they pulled him in favor of their, you know, second-team goalie.
Yeah.
So for him to answer the bell, I think that's definitely a positive going forward. I think this game actually gives him confidence because he said, you know, I go to the Dome, I frown in front of the Dome Gods, I have a decent game, you know what, I'm his team's goalie going forward.
Yeah, and that's what he needed, you know what I mean? I mean, these teams are both in the ACC, and it's not like they're not going to play each other again.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this is kind of like, building up the destiny here. Even though, you know, Duke got a quote-unquote comeback win?
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Are we saying that?
We'll talk about it later in the scoreboard rundown, but yes.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, Syracuse, Virginia are going to be there, thereabouts in the ACC this year, for sure.
Yes. And the player who had the game of his life, I thought, in this game was a guy who you've been a little inconsistent with in your opinion of, Matt Lane. He took his short sticks to school all game long.
It took him a while to get started.
Yes,
his first couple dodges were tough, but you know that's a guy that his matchup, his girth, his size should just give him an advantage on anyone.
And it showed in this game.
Yeah, but did you notice that Virginia kept throwing shorties at him?
Yeah, I mean, disrespected him a little bit.
A little bit, but I think that was the thing because Virginia was doubling, and towards the end of the game, that's how Syracuse got the ball back a lot. They started doubling, right off like picks and jumps. Instead of jumping the slip, they would go over the top, and they would kind of just not even worry about that ball going over because they would stand in the way of the passing lane and get their stick up. I thought that was something that Syracuse's defense did really well in the second half, and it led to a lot of turnovers and a lot of opportunities for them. I thought Jordan Evans got put in advantageous positions and scored. So, I mean, you know, I know there's a few Jordan Evans haters out there, but I thought his goal off the transition, shorthanded, was the goal that turned the tide for Cuse. I think that gave them the juice to win the game. And, you know, his finish was textbook. It was pump high. The goalie moved, stick it where you pumped it. And he did that. And, you know, you got to give credit to somebody. Even if you're wide open, it's easy to screw up a goal. And he didn't screw up. So, you know, all the credit in the world to that him in that play. Scoring shorthanded in lacrosse is pretty hard to do.
Yes. So we wrote a few takeaways post-game after this one. What did you say in yours?
That was actually what I said in my post-game. I thought that was huge. I thought that Salcido stepping up for that goal, mm-hmm. to score that goal. You know, you can see that the UVA guys were told not to slide to him.
Yeah.
And that they were going to put him on an island and make them beat him. And he did. So, you know, that's something to be said. You take tactical risks. And everyone, when you talk about UVA, everyone talks about the risk they take. Lacrosse is about risks.
Yeah.
Everything is about risks, especially not just that system. Like that's what bothers me when I listen to people kind of like talk about like UVA and like Brown and Rutgers and all these teams that are like, oh, they play so fast, they take so many risks. Like that's what lacrosse is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, you know, playing with handcuffs on. That's not what it's supposed to be. I think that's everything. Back up the ball.
Yeah.
You know, obey the fundamentals. Do the right thing. Look for the right pass. But also, when it's time to go to cage, go to the cage. Be a kamikaze Dodger. Just go. Like, that's the greatest thing about lacrosse, and that's what I loved about this game, because very rarely, I feel, does lacrosse come down to this. But I feel like it should come down to it more.
Okay.
Right? We're all obsessed with schemes and systems and offenses and slides. Sometimes it just comes down to, you're my guy, you're defending me. I'm going to take you, and I'm going to score. And that's how it's going to be. You know? You don't have to talk about it. You just got to do it.
I mean, I thought the Salcido goal was a perfect illustration of that because he gives his guy a little bit of a spin zone and he accidentally trips and that leaves him just enough time to get that shot off.
Yeah, and his release is extra quick, which I think people were not expecting as well. Even though he's a little far out. Yes, he is, but, you know, really screened and he got his feet set. And when you get your feet set and you're a Division I lacrosse player, like, you should be able to rip over 90 and get it on cage.
Yes. And another thing I want to ask you about is that, you know, it kind of felt like Virginia weathered two storms from Syracuse. First, early in the game, and then Syracuse tied it again, and then they stretched out to that 8-4 halftime lead, but they didn't have that extra juice at the end of the game. Is that something you may have seen at Brown a little bit?
Because
I feel like Brown was very good at quelling runs, you know, taking momentum back, but they just didn't have it enough sometimes.
Right. I think Brown also had a guy that UVA doesn't have, and they had Del Malloy.
Yeah.
I think the guy for that is Zed Williams, who the equivalent. He's not the equivalent player-wise or style-wise, but in the system that they're running, you know, like if you're you can still run the triangle without Michael Jordan, but like you can run the triangle. You know, I feel like he, you know, Zed Williams is less of a contact dodger, and I think that they run a lot of stuff off of his dodge and cutters off of his dodge. I don't know. I think I did see it with Brown a couple times, but that was really down to teams figuring out how to stop them from scoring in bunches. And I don't really know if Syracuse did that so much as they just stood tall and took the punches to the face and kept going forward.
Yes.
So, I give Syracuse all the credit in the world for, again, weathering that storm. Could Virginia have stretched that out? I don't know. They were getting dominated in ground balls. I think that was tough. I think it was tough for them to
do. But UVA was dominating for maybe about 60 to 75% of the game, and then they flipped the script in the fourth quarter.
Right. And they changed their defense, and they started doubling, and they started playing tighter on the UVA guys and not letting them get underneath. I think in the first half, a lot of those UVA attackers were getting underneath all the defenders. And I think they were getting, you know, a hedge, making them hedge, and getting an easy skip. Again, I think this is the year of the skip pass. It's kind of like my theory this year.
Definitely is for Maryland.
Again, well, it wasn't. I think you mean it wasn't.
I mean,
on Saturday. It wasn't for Notre Dame either. They tried it too. And, like,
we're getting off subject.
Yeah.
Well, but to bring this one in for a landing, so where does Virginia go from here? Because I feel like this is a game that they should not be ashamed of losing, so to speak. Like, I feel like they should feel good that they had the performance that they did. Because, like, they were this close. Like, bad radio, but they were this close to getting that first ACC win in about 3 years.
I think this is the definition of falling forward.
Yes.
That's what I feel. Yes, I agree with that point. I think it's falling forward and moving on to the next. And catching yourself, not even dusting yourself off, just catching yourself, getting up, and running on to the next game. Because they're not going to walk. They're going to run.
All right, let's move on to another huge game from this past weekend, and that was Saturday's result, North Carolina 13, Denver 8. Another number one falls on the same day. Best game of Brian Balcom's life, and I don't think I realized it until I saw the final score sheet and realized that he had 17 saves in this game.
I'm going to go with it wasn't the best game of his life because he won the national championship last year.
I mean, that's what I said. Like, does this performance outrank his national championship performance in a game-winning save in overtime?
Nothing outranks a national championship performance. No, not for him either. He'll tell you the same thing. Let's call him. I bet he'll say the same thing. No.
We welcome onto the show, Brian Balcom. No.
Winning the NCAA championship was better than 17 saves.
Yes.
Yeah.
But regardless, here's the fact. Career high, 17 saves for him. And these shooters for Denver were not joking either. Like, I don't know if you saw Ethan Walker's low to high rips in these games. These shooters were not messing around.
Yeah, I feel like they weren't getting clean looks, and that's how Balcom got that many saves. Just from the stuff that I was seeing, and, you know, we had two screens going on this one, so it was tough to keep up with, except for you ripping exceptional video and posting on Twitter. Good job by you.
Thank you. But another point I want to make is that I felt like Carolina's D really made a statement early in this game, and that held Balcom a little bit on. They blocked shots. They took hard checks. They put, you know, Canizero on the ground early. And I felt like the Tar Heel short sticks, after getting dusted last week against Johns Hopkins, pretty much neutralized Denver's midfield in this game. Nobody beat their man on the Denver midfield. And, you know, Tyler Pace, he had that one very nice goal, but otherwise I felt like he was ineffective in this game.
Yeah, his first game back, right?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't even sure if he was going to play.
Comeback season, baby.
Comeback season. yeah, I think after Hopkins lost, after UNC lost to Hopkins, you know, they circled the wagons. They had this game last year. It was the UMass game.
Yeah,
they circled the wagons. Sometimes you just need to have that meeting. You know, sometimes you need to have the let's close the doors, let's figure out what's going on here. And let's not point fingers, let's point thumbs at ourselves and figure it out.
Point thumbs, I like that.
Yeah. I stole it from Casey Powell. Sorry. be a thumb guy, not a finger guy.
Yeah, but I think that's definitely true because I feel like the response that we saw from Carolina was very emotional. And they got performances out of their emotional leaders, I thought, in this game. You know, Tagliaferri getting on the board, I think, just a few seconds into the game. Huge for them. You know, you see him get all fired up from that goal. He really wanted it.
And Goldstock had all his points in the first half, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
Goldstock, like, he had a few goals, but the real, you know, punch for him was in the second quarter. I think it was 4-3, Carolina, and then Goldstock had three straight goals to end the half.
Right,
and that was the knockout blow in this game, really.
Yeah.
And they also got a goal from Cloutier early in the game.
Yeah.
And so I feel like once those guys say, hey, like, we came to ball, did you come to ball? That's when Carolina balled.
Yeah, and you know, they ground it out. You know, they beat kind of Denver at their own game. Denver's known for being the team that is hard to beat in between the restraining lines. And, you know, you have it on here in your notes. You know, Kelly made a 10 of 24 in faceoffs. I mean, that's a little more even than we predicted going into the game. So, you know, good on him for reducing the impact of Baptiste. So, yeah.
Definitely agree. They won the ground ball battle in the second half. And on the other end, I saw a lot of criticism towards Denver's defense a little bit, and Alex Reddy in goal, he really struggled in this game. But overall, I kind of felt like Carolina's shooters just, they made the most of their chances. They canned 13 of 34 shots. That's about 38%. I feel like a shooting percentage of 40%, that's, like, ideal. Like, I feel like shooting is kind of like batting average in baseball. Like, if you're getting there one-third of the time, you're doing okay. And 40% is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players shoot like 20, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, if you're shooting less than 15%, then you're rough. You're in the C-ball zone.
And you know who shot a donut this past weekend?
Who?
Guess.
Burke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who Dan won't admit that he does not think he's a top 5 player or a top 10 player. Don't lie. Admit it.
No, I think he's a top 10 player.
You're lying.
I'm not so sure.
That is not what you said. I've heard you not say that.
All right.
It's okay. We're all friends here. It's just the Inside the Cross podcast. I can't help but feel like really weirdly close to like everyone because we're in like a closet doing this. This is crazy.
This is our brand new studio at the worldwide headquarters of Inside the Cross.
Our brand new studio.
Which may not be a magazine storage closet.
I mean, it's very intimate. I will give you that.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit.
Kyle is within like arm's length of me, so you can grab my neck.
Yeah, so watch it. So yeah, anything else about this game jumps out to you?
I mean, how much does Denver fall in this game? Like, I feel like it's
in the top 10 or like in general in like spirits?
In the top 10.
Okay. I think I put them at 5.
Really?
And Penn State above them.
I think I put them at 4 below North Carolina, who I moved to 3.
Same.
Yeah.
But I had Penn State at 4.
I don't think this is a game where Denver drops their spirits at all. I think this is probably something that's beneficial for them because I feel like playing for Tierney, there's a lot of pressure to always win, and to finally have a loss, you're like, oh, we finally got one out of the way. We can move forward. We can address the problems that we had in this game.
Well, yeah, and also Denver needs to refocus and, you know, take over that Big East.
They need to
refocus and have that be their goal instead of getting caught up in these games, and I'm sure Tierney would say the same thing. It's like, we need to focus on the conference and, you know, take it game by game and win everything we can from here on out.
All right, moving on to our third headliner game of this podcast before we bring on a very special guest. Whew, what a result from Friday night. I'm not sure the Hopkins alums got to see this game before it was over. It was a bloodbath. Princeton 18, Hopkins 7.
You all turned it off. Didn't you?
Or they probably didn't even realize it was on. They were commuting home, and then they saw the final score, and were like,
and they were like, no, that's wrong. That can't be right.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. I'm not taking shots here. I thought the same thing. I was looking through our scoreboard, and I was just like, wait, what? Because that's not a game I was planning on watching.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
I don't think a lot of people planned on watching it either, and then it turned out to be this exceptionally, like, highlight goal-filled game, actually. Like, Austin Sims was doing him in this game.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best highlights of the weekend. I believe it made number 2 on SportsCenter's top 10.
I didn't notice that.
It's him catching the ball through a cross, going through the middle of the field, falling down, and sticking it right by the goalie's ear. It's beautiful. If you're a shooter, it's a shooter's goal. You love it. It's a great goal.
And a lot of people, you know, coming into this game, you know, both Hopkins and Princeton had differing trajectories. You know, Hopkins obviously coming off a win over North Carolina.
Big win.
Princeton coming off a loss to Hofstra, who was actually sneakily moving their way into our honorable mention top 20. But regardless of that, Austin Sims did not play in the Hofstra game, apparently, and I think that's why they lose that game.
And that's also a highly contested game every year. Those two teams do not like each other. That's like blue-collar, white-collar game. Yes. Let's be real. That's what that is. Come on.
But, you know, watching Princeton's performance in this game, I feel like all the pieces are there for them. You know, they've got really good offensive players in Michael Sowers, McBride, Sims. They got Courier who can do everything for them, even be a scorer, but he's also just tremendous at the dot. And then you've kind of got a decent defense and a goalie in Tyler Blaisdell who can have a big game like he did in this game and provide an emotional uplift.
Well, you talk about emotion, and I think my guy for that, for this team, is definitely Courier. I mean, last year you saw, you know, Courier got, like, suspended for a game for chucking the ball back after he thought there shouldn't have been a goal. And he is an emotional player that can do everything on the field well. He is basically, and this is, you know, I don't want to make this comparison lightly. I used another player earlier. I'm gonna change that player out. I said Doug Shanahan. I don't think that anymore. After this game, I feel like he has the potential to be early career Kyle Harrison.
Ooh.
Because he does everything really well. I mean, I don't think he's as great of a shooter or offensive player yet. More, you know, and Kyle got better at that as his career went on. But I really feel, you know, people maybe don't know this. Kyle Harrison was amazing at faceoffs and amazing, you know, when the ball was on the ground, you wanted Kyle Harrison chasing after it. You wanted him dusting his defender and going to cage. And I feel like Courier is that guy for this Princeton team. He is the heartbeat of this team. And if he plays really well, I saw Princeton tweeted out at our esteemed publisher, Terry Foy, said something like, anyone else have this stat line? And they put out Courier's stat line for the previous game before the Hopkins game. And said can you think of any player that could match this? And I think Terry said something like Tinney, Perkovic, and someone else. But the thing that stood out was the ground ball count was like 10.
Yeah.
And I mean, how many people in D1 that aren't faceoff guys or are faceoff guys do you think can get 10 ground balls?
Not many.
Not many.
Like, not even, like, elite LSMs usually get that many in a game.
No.
They usually get, like, 4 to 5, and that's a good game for them.
Yeah, and I mean, Curry's are face-up guys. If you win the ball to yourself, that's a good stat pad, as they say. But, you know, I think he can do a lot of stuff. He can stay on the whole game. I remember watching them play, I believe it was Brown a couple seasons ago. I think, like, his freshman, sophomore season. And he didn't leave the field.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbelievable. Like to have that level of
cardiovascular fitness.
Yeah, not. I don't like using athleticism as like the catch all term. But I mean, just his cardio, his like, he's just so in shape and so ready to go, and not a sign of deterioration whatsoever with his effort. I mean, that's a guy that we all have to watch. And if he's not is he on the Toronto watch list that just came out?
I don't think he is.
Well, guess what? You need to add him.
Absolutely. We're not even going to get into that, but there's been a lot of criticism of the Tour Tom watch list. But I think his final stat line in this game was like 3 assists, 10 ground balls, calls turnover, 15 for 19 on faceoffs.
That's
like the best quiet game you can ever have.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Is this a one-off? Is there a chance this is a one-off for Princeton?
Possibly. And I actually kind of wrote this down in my notes. If this performance was not an anomaly, Princeton's legit. They're in my top 20. And
what if
we did a Periscope Live, and we both had them in our top 20.
We did. What if it's an anomaly for Hopkins? Do you think it's an anomaly for Hopkins?
I think it is, a little bit. A part of me just wants to say that Hopkins didn't get off the bus. They just didn't show up. You
ooh.
Know.
Ooh.
I mean,
that's harsh, man.
That is harsh, but, I mean, there's no more harsh fan base on their own team, probably, than I would say Hopkins.
Well, Maryland.
But for Hopkins, I kind of felt like we talk about that Brown like loss to Stony Brook where it was just a disaster for their specialists. This was a disaster for Hopkins' specialists as well.
And something we talked about previously, that this was their Achilles heel,
yes.
Right?
And like we said that if they don't win the faceoffs and they don't find the extra possessions, they're going to get snagged. And they got snagged hard in this game because I don't think they had the ball at all for like 20 minutes in this game. Like, from the second quarter where, you know, Princeton blew the doors open and into, like, 5 minutes into the third quarter, I can't remember a Hopkins possession. Like, they just didn't have the ball.
Yeah.
It's insane.
You can't do anything if you don't have the ball, man. Like,
you cannot win unless you have the ball.
Don't. I already did the Bane voice. You can't do it again. I got to set you up for it. There's only so many quotes we can use.
But, yeah, I definitely think this is an anomaly for Hopkins. I still think that they are an elite team. And I think another thing we failed to mention for this game was that Princeton's defense did find a way to eliminate both John Crawley and Joel Tenney in this game. And I think when you hold those guys scoreless and you have the amount of possessions that Hopkins has, you're just going to get a flat game out of them, and that's what we saw.
I think very few times you will see them scoreless again. I think probably never again for the rest of the season.
Yes.
I think they'll learn from their mistakes.
Yes, they will. All right, moving on to our guest. We are very honored to have Hank Lockwood, otherwise known at Henny's, on the show. He's the producer for Barstool Sports, award-winning podcast, Pardon My Take. We welcome him on right now. We are joined on the show today by Hank Lockwood, otherwise known as at Henny's on Twitter. He's the producer for Pardon My Take, and he's always repping our sport. How are you doing today, Hank?
I'm doing good, doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Kind of explain, you know, your connection to the sport. You know, you're always plugging it. You're saying it's 30 years away from being the biggest sport in the country, but how did you get involved with lacrosse, really?
You know, I'm just a diehard. It's one of those things where the first time you see a game get played and it's just you fall in love instantly. Like, that's kind of like me with lacrosse. And baseball is just boring these days, you know? It's like you watch a game, you can't even watch a full game. So my theory is that because lacrosse is so high-paced and high-energy and action-packed, and baseball is so boring, and that's kind of the way kids these days with ADHD and all that stuff, eventually more people are going to get into the high, quick pace of lacrosse and fade off of baseball. So my theory is that eventually, in 30 or so years, they'll basically have switched in terms of fan bases and popularity and stuff.
Contested terrain, man.
No, that's good. I feel like that's good. That's kind of a rare take from a New Englander, though, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the truth is that I used to love baseball. I, like, played baseball and stuff. But now that I don't play, I can't even watch it because it's so boring.
Yeah. We all dislike baseball here. But, you know, what's it like being a lacrosse guy at Barstool where you kind of run up into the opposition? We know that, like, you know, PFT, Big Cat, they're not too big on it. You know, Perez is not super into it.
It's tough, you know. We're really, no one wants to hear our voice, but I try and be the voice of reason. I fight the good fight. Every time I bring it up, I kind of get on or put down. But, you know, it's all right. I believe in lacrosse, so it's a good fight to be on.
He's a good soldier, man.
Yeah.
He's a good soldier.
That's good.
It's true.
You got a question for him?
Yeah. So, unrelated to lacrosse, just while I have you here. Our friend Dan doesn't know what it's like to root for a winning team because he's from Baltimore and Maryland. And, like,
I know the Orioles are horrible.
Yeah, but I try to tell him what it's like to be a Patriots fan, and, like, I feel like I'm not getting through to him. Can you describe it for me a little better?
I mean, it's kind of just like, it's really, it changes your whole lifestyle, because you just, when you are in a culture of winning and believing in a coach and player that always come through time after time, it kind of just changes your whole outlook on life. Anything is possible, and you can kind of take on the world.
It's so, a lot more fun up there. It's fun being a winner, Dan. It's basically what he's trying to tell you.
We had one good year. Joe Flacco's still elite, right?
Yeah, he had four good games.
Yeah, four good games. That's all we need.
In his life. Yeah. It's great.
What, Brady have like four good Super Bowls?
Wow. Five. Don't take five. Shots at the king on the podcast.
It's five, actually.
Five. Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Come with the king, best not miss.
What did you think about the whole hullabaloo about like Chris Hogan, him being a Penn State lacrosse player and that kind of blowing up?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I mean, obviously, it's the more spotlight the sport can get, the better. So, you know, especially too, Belichick being such a lacrosse supporter kind of further strengthens my belief, because if he is into lacrosse, then there's obviously some good going on there. But it was good to see Hogan get so much recognition.
Yeah, have you seen, obviously, you know, Belichick wearing all the Hopkins stuff at the combine and stuff like that? I feel like that's just a sign.
Yeah.
It's a sign of great things to come.
Also, Pellegrino is like, their secondary coach?
He's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of their defensive back coach. He used to play at Hopkins, but... So you watched a little bit of Syracuse, Virginia earlier today?
Yeah, you know, it was an unexpected win, big win for Syracuse, tough loss for Virginia.
Do you have, like, a team of choice, so to speak?
I'm a Duke fan.
Ooh, really?
Well, they had an upset win today.
Yeah, they beat Richmond today. But the thing about Duke is that they've got a bunch of kids from New England.
Yeah. My dad went to Duke, so I'm a big Duke fan. But yeah, that Syracuse game, they did good on the faceoffs. They really controlled the ground ball game, so it was good to see them win.
Do you believe in dome gods?
You're going to have to, what's a dome god?
The Syracuse plays in the dome, and Syracuse got a lot of calls today, and we think that the dome gods helped them get the calls.
There's like magic in the rafters or something. It's kind of like when, you know, AFC East teams go to play at the Patriots, and they always seem to lose somehow.
They don't seem to lose. They do lose.
But like even like the Buffalo Bills will be like, oh, man, the Buffalo Bills are finally playing a good game, but they always manage to lose. It's kind of like the same narrative.
That makes sense. I can get down with some dome god beliefs.
Okay.
Cool. Dome god beliefs?
Yeah.
All right.
That's good.
We're going to make it a t-shirt.
Yeah, we're gonna make a t-shirt. We're going to send it to you, for sure.
All right, so a few more questions we want to ask you is, what was it like, you know, with the Barstool Rundown, being on Comedy Central, you personally going to Houston, doing all of that, just go into your experience, man. It looked like an awesome time.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to see the thing come to TV. It was kind of surreal, but, you know, we had so many, like, professional people, such a professional set that it was, like, it was very fun to be a part of, I guess, because it was a very, like, cool operation because it was just so big.
Who is like, your actual friend in real life from the Barstool, like, group?
I'm pretty close with all of them, to be honest. I mean, I've worked here for so long and have been, like, done so many things with so many people. There's no one that, like, I'm not friends with, and there's no one, you know, everyone's pretty friendly with each other.
How many times have you almost been fired from Barstool, though?
Just once.
Just once? I showed Dan that article today, and because I was like, do you know the history here? Like,
I didn't know.
Because the Barstool phenomenon, in terms of, like, nationwide, is relatively new.
Yes.
But if you're from New England, like yeah. You kind of, like, grew up with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, 100%. Yeah, I was trying to educate him on the history.
Where are you guys based out of?
He lives in New Hampshire. I live in Baltimore. So, like, he runs what we call Inside Lacrosse North, which is basically...
Me.
Him.
The women's editor.
Going to Harvard, Holy Cross, Brown on occasion.
Yep.
Boston University.
BU Providence.
And I'm just down here eating crab cakes, watching Joe Flacco. Yeah. Eating crap.
You live the stereotype. I live the lifestyle, is how I like to describe it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like Hank can get down with that. He understands.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Hank, another question I have for you is just kind of explain how, like, the whirlwind that, you know, Pardon My Take has gone over. I guess it's been over a year since you guys, like, started recording shows, right?
Yep, just over a year.
Yeah, so, like, I remember, you know, listening around this time last year and saying, these guys are hilarious. How are they not, like, the biggest guys on the planet? And now, a year later, it seems like you guys are, like, the number one sports podcast in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously Big Cat and PFT are... They work hard, and they're the funniest guys doing it. So it's just fun to kind of be a part of it, help them blow up.
Well, you wanted to tell him a story about Big Cat, so go ahead. Tell him your Big Cat story.
So there's this one time where I, like, kind of inadvertently met Big Cat, and I didn't even know it. So last summer, I was actually, like, taking a bus up to New York, listen to Pardon My Take, while I was going up there. And I go to Dumbo in Brooklyn. And I'm in the street market around there getting, like, Shanghai street food. And I see a guy who looks like Big Cat. And I say, wait, could that actually, like, be Big Cat? So I go on my phone, like, look at his Twitter pic. And I basically surmise that this guy is not fat enough to be Big Cat. So anyway, my name's Dan. The Shanghai street food order, like, the food order comes through. Like, Dan, your order is ready. And I go, like, that's me. And then, like, Big Cat comes up next to me, says, no, that's me, takes my food, like, I realize it's actually him, and before I can say anything, he, like, bolts down the street.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So Big Cat stole your food, or was it his food?
It was, I mean, I guess it was.
You think it was yours, though.
It could have been mine.
Okay.
Like, he could have taken it. Like, we're both named Dan, we both put in our order's name as Dan.
So Big Hat owes you some Shanghai, is basically what
he basically stole, like, my street food one
time. Did you not get any food out of that?
No, I just had to wait, like, an extra two or three more minutes. But, like, that could have been mine. I don't know if you ordered before me or after, but...
Okay.
It was 2 weeks after, like, the Coney Island thing, like, the hot dog eating contest. I was like, all right,
yeah.
Let the Big Cat eat. You know, you gotta let him eat.
Yeah. Gotta let him eat.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I actually submitted it for Jimbo, and it didn't get picked up.
No, it's too bad.
Probably too long for me to read.
All right, good. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Hank. Right. We really appreciate you coming on the show. You know, if you don't mind giving us a little plug when we publish this tomorrow, we'd be really appreciative.
No, yeah, no problem. Just tweet at me. I'll hit that retweet button.
Dan lives for retweets.
Whew, very interesting interview with Hank Lockwood. Really surprised to know that he didn't play lacrosse, but that was in the pre-interview with him.
I'm really glad that he got to tell you what it's like to root for a winner. That's my favorite part of that segment.
Hey, Joe Flacco's still elite.
No, he's not. I don't care if you got a shirt.
All right, before we go into some of the other results from this past weekend, let's do some segments. I'm really excited for this. But first,
excited for this segment. Oh, so listen, we've been cooped up in the air. All I've done is gone home and sleep and come back in the morning, Saturday and Sunday. There was a play call that Dan really wants to play for you guys that he literally played it 50 times. And I told him if he played it one more time, I would jump over the desk and beat him to death. So I'm going to let him play this now, but I'm not going to be happy about it. And he is within striking distance. So if you play it more than once, we're going to have a problem.
But there's two calls. I want to see.
No, you're going to play the one call,
okay,
and that's it.
All right, but this is my – we didn't even introduce the segment. This is my weird watch of the week.
Okay.
But it was the Rutgers-Brown – Big Ten Network Plus or whatever it's called, broadcast of this game. And I just love this guy's jersey accent on this call.
It's unreal. It's unreal. Please play it.
Threw a slash. He got hit right in the head. This is going to be a free shot for all you.
Scarlet Knights with a free opportunity.
Good luck.
Comes to Mullins.
Whoa! He scores. Another big.
And we got to do the other one, too. I'm sorry.
Come on.
We got to do the other one.
So down to 10 now, the shot clock. Henningberg, thinking about winding up.
What a play! Karen Mullins puts it home.
Bubbly Mullins!
Man, oh man, did he get hot this quarter. Great look by Jules Henningberg. He finds Mullins in his hot spot. You can't leave Mullins alone right there at goal line extended on that.
I loved it.
I hate you.
I loved it. All right, so like for me to go from complaining about announcers in the Hopkins North Carolina game to just loving some guy's enthusiasm for the game and what's going on in front of him, that's definitely a positive. Come on.
He tried to turn Mullins into holy moly from to holy Mullins. I'm all for wordplay, but not like, I guess I don't like spoken wordplay. I'd rather write it down. I don't know. You played it so many times, though, guys. I really like.
I just kept laughing. I just thought it was a great call.
No, like, you did it to annoy me after number 10.
No.
And you kept doing it. You did.
No.
It's okay.
You think you know me, but you don't.
Oh, God.
But I loved it. I thought it was a great call. I love the guy's enthusiasm. I feel like there's very few broadcasts where people can translate the enthusiasm for what they're watching. And this guy definitely nailed it, I thought.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't sound like he came off the set of The Sopranos at all. Not at all. Not at all. Come. But I gotta ask you something.
Okay.
What's your plan here?
Winning this game with 15 seconds remaining.
And?
No survivors.
Good. That was good. We're keeping that one.
Kyle, let's continue this segment. Did you have a weird watch of the week for you? Besides what I just did right there?
No, but the ceiling is indeed the roof.
Yes. If you don't know what we're referring to, Michael Jordan last night, Saturday night, at the Duke-North Carolina game actually said that. The ceiling is the roof. And there's already T-shirts out on the internet.
Yeah, and everybody is, you know, oh my God, it's the crying meme guy, not that's I know. What, the greatest what a special basketball player. Night. That's the greatest basketball player of all time. No, yeah. It's fine.
He's the crying meme guy.
I weep for the younger
generation. Isn't it so cool that ESPN got him on the on the broadcast? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. What do we got next? We got
Movers and Shakers.
Movers and Shakers. Good. We got to get some like music for stuff like this.
Movers and Shakers. Movers and Shakers. Not exactly, but.
No, hopefully not.
All right, so I know for me, Rutgers definitely keeps on moving on up. They are just charging on up those rankings. Also, Stony Brook, undefeated. I like what they're doing. I think, you know, we talked about this a few podcasts ago. We need to see a little bit more consistency from Stony Brook. They got that done with a 9-6 win over Fairfield. And then I'm also impressed with what Army's doing lately. You know, they defied the Dome Gods. They got that win in the Dome. They're 4-1. They really beat up on Lafayette this past weekend. And also, Duke is back.
No, they're not.
They're back in my top 20.
Nope.
And they are back in yours, too,
nope.
I think.
Booted them. You know who I booed him for?
Fake news.
My mover and shaker.
Which is?
Northern Bias, baby.
Harvard.
Undefeated.
Harvard?
Undefeated, though.
You're like, in the preseason, you were like the biggest Harvard hater ever.
I wasn't a hater. I just questioned how they were going to get it done with just Morgan Cheek and Lang and 15 freshmen. And the answer is turn Morgan Cheek into a WMD.
Okay.
Because that's how they get it done now. Just let him get out of the way, sweep, score, shoot, whatever he has to do to score for them. And yes, the reliance on him is alarming. But, again, they're undefeated. My other mover and shaker, which I feel like everyone else is going to have this week, if you've been paying attention, also undefeated, off to the greatest start in program history, another Northern Bias team, a Boston University.
Yes, they weren't so much of a shaker for me because I had them in my top 20. I think they only moved two or three
spots. Oh, they shake.
They definitely shaked a little bit.
Oh, they shake.
But they didn't really move too much for me.
Okay. You had them in the top 15?
No, I think they were 16 or 17 for me.
Well, you should have. Fair enough.
And sadly, one mover that moved out of ours was Richmond. I think for both of us, you know, this was a team that was undefeated before. They fell to Duke in a comeback loss, and now they're just out.
I feel like we're talking about this, like, in reverse, right? Like, we're like being like, oh, man, such a bad loss for Richmond to lose to Duke. Like, can you imagine us saying that, like, 2 or 3 years ago? That's crazy. That's crazy. I feel like it's actually a testament to Richmond in some weird, twisted way. But, you know, another team that really struggled here, we're going to jump into the rundown real quick, but Yale losing to Bryant is, like,
really surprising.
Like, that's, like, one of those late game day, check the scoreboard, being like, what?
Yeah.
What?
And it was on Watch ESPN, too, but nobody was watching it because it was the same time as the Virginia-Syracuse game.
Right. Except for our own Matt Kinnear, who had a great quote about it, but we'll get to that in the rundown, which we will start
right now. But yeah, Bryant 9, Yale 6. Yale looks lost, is what Matt Kinnear said on Twitter.
Strong words for Matt. Matt Kinnear is not a man of many strong words.
And he loves Yale.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy who's closely associated himself with this program of late. So for him to say that and watch that game and come away with that perception of the team, very interesting. For me, I looked at the stats. I didn't really get much time to watch this one, but Bryant won the faceoff battle. They rallied in the second quarter, and then they put the finishing blow against Yale in the fourth quarter.
It's something they couldn't do against BU earlier this week.
Yes.
BU was out to a hot start, actually kind of figured out their zone. You know, Bryant plays a lot of zone. No, I don't think anyone in the NCAA plays more zone than Bryant, I would venture to say, which means they're the best at it for the most part until you run against an offense that also knows how to score against the zone like BU did. And they went up on them early. Bryant fought back and were within, you know, one goal, but eventually it was too much pressure from the Terriers to put them down. This result is surprising in that it's Yale. But if Yale can't score, and this is something you talked about last week with Maryland, if Yale struggles to score, what is their identity? If Scotty Buckets isn't getting his goals, and Ben Reeves, who was held off the score sheet, had 4 assists, but held off the score sheet in this game, if he's not getting goals, Yale's going to struggle.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a battle of Bulldogs that Bryant definitely won.
Yes. And another stat I want to point out is that Yale was not very clinical in the fourth quarter. 4 failed clears. 7 overall turnovers, lost the faceoffs 2-3. And another thing, one thing I didn't talk about last week with Yale, because, you know, the young guys on their team played well, but this is still a very young team, and you're going to have moments where you need your guys to go out and perform, whether it's good or bad. And against the Maryland game, they played very good. But, you know, looking at the score sheet, it sounds like some of their young guys who they've been leaning on lately just didn't have the output in this game.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's tough when you're younger to play against a zone. It is. I actually believe that. I think it's much harder for younger players to adjust to a zone because the Bryant zone in particular makes a lot of bad looks look tasty.
Yeah.
And lures you into taking those shots. That's what a good zone does, by the way. I know, again, I sound like the only lover left of zones, but I feel comfortable saying that. I think that if you play it as well as Bryant does under all of their tutelage of all those that great coaching staff, Casey Broderson, New Hampshire represent, did a great job, does a great job in general. And Bryant is underrated. I don't think the top 20, they've had some tough losses already, but you know, this is a team that can win their conference. They can win the
Northeast should conference. Be favored in their conference.
Yeah, I think they are, especially after Hobart got waxed by Binghamton today.
Yeah. So can never count out a Presser squad, can we?
No.
Nope. All right, another game, Penn State 14, Penn 13. This definitely top 10 matchup, so this was obviously a huge game.
Did we get to see this?
No. Penn what? State, get a stream, man.
What are you doing?
We're like out here supporting you guys, and we can't even watch how good you guys are because you don't have a stream.
Let me tell you something.
I know you're playing indoors and all that, but come on.
Let me tell you something. We have all of your gear here. We just shot it. You're not getting it back until you get a working stream. I'm holding it hostage.
Get a camera, man. Get Periscope, man.
Figure it out.
Yeah. But Penn State, very, very good. Very, very versatile. They answered the bell when Mac O'Keefe was shut down in this game. I think he only had a goal. Still very young, but, you know, Gerard Arceri, he won like 14 of 23 faceoffs, I think, in this game. You know, this is a kid that we were super high on coming out of high school. For him to, you know, go in and have a seamless transition, huge for this team because you play in the Big Ten, you're going against some high-quality Fogos.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, Penn was winning this game. We were kind of like, you know, before the game started, we were sitting around and we were like, oh, this is the litmus test. One of these two teams is going to break away here. This is a key game for these two teams. And a couple people in the office kind of gave me a look when I said Penn State. I picked Penn
because I said their defense was very good. I also said that they're going to prove that they can score, and I thought they did. You know, Tyler Dunn, 5 goals in this game. He's a guy who is kind of like Courier in a way, but probably not as impactful. Takes faceoffs, plays a lot of offense, but, you know, 5 goals for him. Very good game. You know, but Penn State, they just answered the bell. They found a way to win in this game.
Too much offense. Great offenses, again, I'm going to keep reiterating this point. Everyone says defenses are great until you get a game like Notre Dame, Maryland. And then you're like, wait, defenses are terrible. I hate defense. Defense is stupid. Offense is what's going to win you games.
Yes.
It really is. Like, defense keeps you in the game.
Yeah.
Defense keeps it close, but offense wins it.
And I remember when we were talking about Penn State kind of like in the beginning stages of the season or even in the preseason, we kind of said, you know, this team doesn't have a guy offensively. Do you still think that? Because I feel like they got
a lot of guys.
That's what I'm saying. They don't have a guy. They've got a few guys that say, whoa, these guys can really light up the score sheet.
Anytime you have a guy I think they have like 4 players that can score 4 goals any game.
Yeah.
Like any given game, those guys can drop 4 and you're like, oh, that's a good game for them. And then you have, you know, they have O'Keefe who scored, like, what, 7 goals and 8 goals in games? Like,
yeah.
That's crazy.
He's the leading scorer in the nation as a freshman.
It's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. But eventually, like, someone's going to figure you out, right? It's the freshman kind of strike is also kind of like the new kid that people don't have tape on yet.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's enough tape to, like, figure out what he likes to do and you know, not stuff him, but stifle him.
Yeah.
But, again, it's not enough to stop the Penn State machine. So I'm on the train. Not similar to like how I was driving the brown bus last year, but I feel like I'm buying a ticket.
Yeah, like I definitely like saw the train. I said, you know what, I'm gonna run after that train and hop on, but you know, I'm not going into the carriage just yet.
Might get off at the next stop. Yeah, I got you. Hey! Great analogy work.
Woo! Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, final game for the scoreboard rundown. We kind of talked about it earlier, but Rutgers 13, Brown 11. I'm going to let you kind of go right into this, but I think we're both kind of in agreement that Brown's defense was not as advertised coming into this season.
Disorganized. Yeah. Disorganized. That's all I have to say about this performance. It's completely disorganized, similar to the first quarter against Stony Brook at points. Now, they had a little bit, not a little bit, they had a lot more consistency than they did against Stony Brook, but I feel like there comes a point when they're playing where they kind of lose their composure and start freelancing. And when you freelance on defense, that's when you don't freelance on defense. Like, you got to stay in the scheme. If you keep getting scored on, you got to rely on your goalie to back you up. And by the way, 19 saves for Phil Goss in this game? I mean,
does he enter the category of feast or famine goalie? Because we've seen a few of those guys in NCAA lacrosse the past couple seasons.
Where he's like, now. Yeah. I mean, as of right now. I mean, when you go from 5 saves to 19, that's a big jump. You know what I mean? Like, that's tough.
Yeah. I think a takeaway for me also in this game is that watching what Brown's been, you know, putting out on the field, both in their loss to Stony Brook and their loss in this game, is that They have, you know, the world's best player in the world in Dylan Molloy, but I think the two guys that are running with him in Jack Niffin and
Luke McCaleb,
just a little bit young.
A little bit. They're both freshmen.
Yeah.
I mean, they're finishers.
Yes.
Right?
They're finishers. They got to get service.
Yeah, and I think that Brown relies more on their midfield than people realize to create things out of the chaos of the pace.
Yeah.
And when they play against a team like Rutgers, who Rutgers is a pace and space team.
Yeah.
So they're not just going to run it the whole time. They're going to run it to a good spot and set up.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Brown, I think, forces a lot of stuff. But still, you know, again, the thing is, we're talking about systems again, and it's players getting into positions to have success. The best system puts the best player in the most likely scenario to score,
mm-hmm.
right? And I feel like this Brown system, I don't want to be too critical of it, but one of the problems when you run a system that's so reliant on the pace of the game and the energy of the game is that you don't get a chance to single out your best player and give him a chance to take it over.
Yeah.
And I think that last year...
The system has to prevail.
Right. And I think last year, you know, Brown took several opportunities to let Molloy be Molloy.
Yeah.
And I feel like they would be smart to try that tact once again. Even I know it's a different coaching staff. I know it is technically a different system. But this system is much more reliant on transition to score than the one last year. And I think that when you have a player like Molloy, you need to get him the ball, you know, like 15, 20 times a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's a dude. I don't want him shooting it 15, 20 times a game. No one should do that in lacrosse. You know, Allen Iverson's not playing lacrosse, but like, he needs to get that ball a lot more in his stick and make plays. And sometimes, again, sometimes it comes down to, this is me. I get the ball. You're defending me. You're nothing. I'm going to destroy you and I'm going to score. Like, that. Like, sometimes lacrosse comes down to that. And I think that Molloy is one of the best players in the nation at doing that. I think he just needs a couple more chances per game, a couple more touches to get a chance to get back into that killer mentality that made him the Tour Time winner.
I agree. And let's look to Rutgers, because we obviously mentioned them as one of our big shakers and movers in this week. I think Rutgers is really good.
They're definitely fun to watch.
Yes.
They kept pace with Brown, and then they passed them. You know, it was like watching two sprinters on a track.
Yeah, I mean, watching you know, Rutgers score a few transition goals late in the game, it's like, wow. Like, they are beating them at their own game, and they're making a statement in the way they are doing it. They call it our tempo at Rutgers. It was completely in display in this game.
Yeah, and I think they're well-deserving of a top 10 ranking. I think they're another candidate, though, for if you lose a bad one, you're out.
I actually don't agree with that.
No.
Because I feel like
okay. They're
going to prove
I mean, a bad one, not Hopkins. Like I feel like if you lose a bad one, you're out.
Because I feel like Rutgers, I think for me, they've lost so many guys who would otherwise be contributors, but they're still seemingly getting it done against really good teams, you know? You know, they beat Fairfield, they beat Brown. You know, guys are falling left and right, but guys like Chad Tolliver.
Come on, man. Everyone beats Fairfield. Let's be real. Come on.
Yeah, Fairfield might be a team we were wrong about. But Kieran Mullins had a huge game.
I don't know about this we stuff. I don't know. Again, you keep using that we word.
Kieran Mullins had a big game. Chad Tolliver is a guy who I've been really impressed with. I think he's from Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, let's take a look at their schedule real quick.
Okay.
We got Stony Brook.
Going to be a classic, I think.
Do you?
I think it's going to be great.
Okay. Jersey versus the Island. All right. And then they have Princeton. This doesn't look easy. Those are two bad games to play back-to-back. I mean, they're not playing them back-to-back.
I won't dispute that.
They're playing four games, 4 days apart from each other. But, like, you know, that's...
Delaware, they got Delaware on the schedule. That's not going to be easy either. Delaware's really surging.
I mean, they end their entire... I mean, those aren't conference games, though. So the back end of their schedule is loaded with other conference games.
Yeah, which is going to be tough, but I think they can make a statement.
So let's say they lose to Stony Brook.
Okay.
And they beat Princeton, or they beat Stony Brook and lose to Princeton. Like, what's the ideal path for them to be in the best position for the Big Ten?
I mean
like, obviously winning both games.
Obviously. I would say it's tough to say because I feel like you should beat Stony Brook given the caliber of your team. But I feel like losing to Princeton would be a big loss for them.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's New Jersey.
Yes. But I will say this. If, you know, if they lose to Stony Brook, I feel like they definitely take a confidence hit.
Yeah.
Because they're going to face a team that can also score, that can also kind of play a style similar to theirs. And you say, you know what, we just beat Brown. For Stony Brook to come and say that they're both better than Brown and us is a big statement.
Yeah, I think that Stony Brook game, I think, is a much bigger game. Just okay. Personally, I think that's a huge game for them, huge test. That's, to me, if you're real deal, you got to beat Stony Brook.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a must win. And not for conference or anything like that. I just feel like if you're going to roll, you're going to keep rolling, got to beat Stony Brook in this game, right?
Yes.
All right.
All right, we're going to bring this one in for another landing.
We land a lot.
Yeah. We had
bad analogy school.
We had a lot of fun in the Isle War Room. I just want to say that.
A little too much.
Probably a little too much, like with the helmets and all that.
Yeah, I mean, much love to Chris Rosenthal. You guys did the Isle Game Day recap. I wanted to producer that. Someone doesn't take direction very well. I'm not going to say who it was. it was tough. It was tough producing that.
It was me.
But I believe that Zach Bagwell will pull out an exceptional highlight. And you guys will have not only this podcast to listen to, but a great recap of the weekend's action.
Yes. Once again, we want to plug our other podcasts. Listen to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast on Wednesdays and the Quint and Foy podcast on Fridays. I'm Dan Abram. You can follow me at DanAbram2423 on Twitter. Thank you for listening, everybody.
And I'm Kyle Devitt. You can follow me at the Kyle Devitt, THEKYLEDEVITTE on Twitter and Instagram. We love you guys.
See you next week.
Inside the Cross Podcast.